Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You know, there doesn't seem to be a lot of good news lately, so we thought, hey, perfect time to have our next guest on. He always has some fun and heartwarming stories to share with us. The editor of Our Wisconsin Magazine, Mike Beno, is back with us. And we'll talk with him about some of the people, places, and events that make Wisconsin special. We've got a story about tickets to the 1957 World Series, a 13-year-old who's been raising money to help fight childhood cancer since she was 8, and a speedy train engineer, among other things. I hope you'll join in the conversation. Maybe you have a question about Our Wisconsin. Maybe you've got a story to share. Maybe you rode on a steam engine. You ever done that? What do you recall about the 57 World Series? You know who was in it, don't you? The Milwaukee Braves at the time. What do you love most about fall in Wisconsin? Call us at 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Mike Beno, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
It's always fun, Larry. Thanks so much for inviting me back. And, it's a gorgeous fall up here in Manitowish Waters. There is in Presque Isle. There's a lot of color up, despite a 60-mile-an-hour windstorm last week. There's a lot of color up. A little bit chilly and rainy, though, so bring your heavy coats when you come.
Well, before we even start talking about some of the stories, it's probably worth it for those who may not have heard you before on the show or seen the magazine to talk about Our Wisconsin magazine. So review that for us a little bit, will you? It's history.
Yeah, thank you so much. We're closing out our 8th year of doing this, and that seems a little bit otherworldly to me, because this magazine was launched off a kitchen table here in the Northwoods of Wisconsin and Presque Isle in 2013. And it was launched with the idea that we should have a magazine that celebrates all that's great in the Badger State. A lot of that goes on in different media. Wisconsin Public Radio celebrates this every day. We wanted to go to, much like you do to your listeners, with your listeners, invite the people of Wisconsin, the regular folks themselves, to chime in with this, local stories, what makes their area of the state something really special. The idea being that Wisconsin resides in the minds and the hearts of readers and of its people. And it seems to have taken off. We're doing well 8 years later. The magazine's 82 pages, full color, and it's positive front to back. That's done with a purpose, and it was done long before the word COVID was ever heard. Interesting, I gathered some comments here, Larry. It's the magazine being 100% positive and upbeat seems to be something needed now. We've heard from readers. Laura Kaiser of Okano Falls said, "Your issues help keep our days upbeat and normal." Wendy Kreider of Barton said, "Your issues are my escape during difficult times." And a nice one came from Patricia Jameson of Wanakee, who said, "You provide reading full of happiness, kindness, gentleness, humor, and beauty. This is unlike any other periodical I receive. Blessings to you." Well, we're blessed to live in Wisconsin, and I think me as an editor, there could be no subject I would rather write about than the place we live.
Yeah, it's always fun to read, for sure. I mentioned in my introduction about the Milwaukee Braves, and you know, baseball playoffs are starting. Unfortunately, the Brewers lost last night, but it was fun to read the story about the Milwaukee Braves fan who won tickets to the game back in 57.
Well, and this is that's a perfect example of just a regular average person, not a professional journalist. It's Dorothy Hanson Rohde of Appleton, formerly of West Allis, is recalling her father, the ultimate Milwaukee Braves fan. For those who don't remember 1957, when the Braves knocked off the Yankees in the World seventh game of the World Series to take it, the Braves arrived in Milwaukee from Boston in 1953, and from that time until the time they left for Atlanta, they recorded 13 consecutive winning seasons at County Stadium. A lot of people don't remember that. Dorothy's father was a machinist. Milwaukee's known for heavy industry in its past, and so he worked at International Harvester, and his name was Herb Hanson. Now, Herb was, as I said, he worked in the factory, got grimy every day, and he was not of means that he could afford World Series tickets, or any tickets, really. So he took a second job as an usher at the park, and he'd come home from work. He worked in the evenings and on weekends, and if the Braves were playing that weekend, the family wasn't going anywhere because Dad had to go work at the Braves. And Mom would press his white shirts for a half hour, and he would walk to the park. They lived in West Allis, and once in a while he took his daughter with him. And he knew the Braves. He knew some of the Braves from outside the dugout before the games, and was a walking encyclopedia of Braves knowledge. Now, Dorothy has talked about her father being a baseball lover through the years, but she ran across a photo recently, and it's a beautiful black and white photo of a guy with a smile on his face big enough to light up a coal mine. Yeah. He's holding three tickets, and what this is her machinist dad went to work at the three home games in the 57 World Series, October 5th, 6th, and 7th. They were all day games, and none were on TV at the time locally. And so he was going to, he took time off, paid time off work to do those games. And he decided, besides that, to enter a raffle at work to win some tickets. Well, guess who won them?
Yeah.
So the usher won his tickets, and he's looking like a kid that, you know, on Christmas morning holding these three tickets. Now, here's a cornerstone of this magazine. It's audience engagement. Dorothy is asking readers to help the family figure out a mystery that's hung on for 60-odd years. And it's this. Dad's got three tickets, single seats, okay, one for each home game, the 5th, 6th, 7th of October. They don't know what he did with them because he worked. Did he save them as a memento? Did he give them to friends or relatives? Did he sell them? Mom didn't go to the game. The kids didn't go. Did you use them, Larry? Dorothy wants to know. So anyway, we tell the story of Herb Hanson. And if anybody knows who used those three single seats in 1957, how they got them, the family wishes you well and hopes you had as much enjoyment as Herb did. But if you know this, write us at editors@ourwisconsinmag.com, and we'll get the message to Dorothy. And there's another story later in the issue where we're asking to solve a mystery, too. But stuff like this is a lot of fun. And as we've said, Larry, so many times, it's a cliche, but you couldn't make this up. I couldn't make it up. But the readers share these ideas with us, and that's the key to every good story. At its root, it's got to have a strong idea, and we rely on our readers for those.
Yeah, I tell you, it was amazing to me what young people are capable of. That young girl in Superior who decided to help cure childhood cancer. What a great story.
That story made me feel very inadequate. I don't know about you, Larry, but
yeah,
an 8-year-old girl and her friend are goofing around one evening, and they needed something to do, and they thought about what they could do, and they decided to cure childhood cancer. A schoolgirl up in Superior. Evie Keppers, age 8. Okay, she came up with that idea with her friend. She never knew how much good she was going to bring to the world. 5 years later, she's 13 now, going into eighth grade, and so far. Their original target was to raise $100. So far, she and this group she has formed has raised $32,000 to fight childhood cancer, donating that money to research and also donating that to the families affected by this and suffering with it as well. She founded a group called Fighting for Friends, and the cornerstone of this is a one-mile run walk that they put on every year to raise their money. And the proceeds, as I said, are donated directly 10% to the family, 20% to buy movies, games, books, journals, other things for the children on the wish list of the patients. 70% is to St. Baldrick's Foundation for research.
What a great story.
We going to break, Larry?
Yeah, we're going to take a little break. But Evie's story is a great one. And there are a lot more great stories. I know Steve from Wausau is on with a question, too. And, Steve, I hope you can hang with us here. We are going to take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we will be back with our guest to talk more about our Wisconsin magazine and what's going on there. It's always great to have Mike Beano with us. I'm Larry Mueller. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Always interesting to have Mike Beano with us, editor of Our Wisconsin Magazine, talking to him about some of our great Wisconsin stories found in every issue of his magazine. So you may know a great person or place you'd like to talk with him about. Love to hear your stories, too. You can join in the conversation at 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And we have Steve from Wausau on, who says he knows what's happened to the murals in the Wausau post office. And before I bring Steve in, Mike, I want to have you talk about the story you have in our Wisconsin about those post office murals.
Oh, Steve,
and then we'll bring Steve in.
Can't wait to talk to you, Steve. As I mentioned before, we ask the readers once in a while for some help, and somebody out there was looking for some help in solving a mystery. Where did the mural in the Wausau post office go? Now, what are we talking about? We got a story in here talking in our October-November issue, talking about a post office aficionado, a hobbyist who loves all things post office involved. His name's David Gates. He is he lives in Crystal Lake, Illinois, but he got involved, interested in post offices when he took a rafting trip on the Peshtigo River and stopped in the tiny post office of Athelstan in about 2005. By 2007, he was visiting a lot of small-town post offices, and he discovered something. In many of them, particularly in rural areas, posted prominently on the walls are large, colorful murals, hand-painted pieces of art. He started wondering about those. Well, what he tapped into was a WPA project, a Works Progress Administration from the Depression, commissioned through the U.S. Treasury, commissioned 1,200 murals during the 1930s to be painted in post offices around the United States. These were chosen to go into post offices because that's where there was a lot of foot traffic, a center of the community, so the artwork would be seen. It was meant to uplift people during a downtime. This sounds familiar, you know, during the Depression. It put, they commissioned artists, it put them to work to paint these beautiful paintings. And the 1,200 of them across the United States amount to a gigantic art gallery with the works spread out by many, many miles. And it's also a look back into the history of the state, back around the 30s, but also times times before that some of these artists were harking to with their subjects. In Wisconsin, 35 of these were painted. Okay, and so David Gates made it his, the aficionado here, made it his business to go around and study and photograph as many of these as possible and gather information about the artists, the subject matter, and what went on. For example, in Stoughton, there is a mural that celebrates airmail service, showing an old two-prop plane and the people in the 1920s and 30s garb unloading the plane. There's one on dairy farming by Richard Jansen in the Reedsburg post office. Jansen's from Milwaukee. A couple more here. In Hayward, there's the land of woods and lakes. So it's showing a woodland scene. We've got also logging, we've got dairy farming, and there's a long list of Wisconsin post office mural locations. Later, I will give you a website you can go, so you'll see all these towns where you can go and see these, okay?
But Wausau has lost it.
Wausau and Ladysmith, okay? Ladysmith, the post office, the mural once in the post office is thought to have been painted over or destroyed. They're uncertain about that. And also Wausau, they don't know where that one went. And so those are two mysteries we need some help with, Ladysmith and Wausau. Now I best we better hear from Steve.
Steve in Wausau, you know what happened or may know what happened to the mural in Wausau?
Well, I got my edition, October, November edition yesterday, and I said, well, I remember seeing those paintings, and then I'm on the American Legion Honor Guard for funerals up here, and but one of my members also used to be the postmaster at the Wausau Post Office, and it was in an old federal building is where it was. And he said he remembers them on the south wall. He thought there was two or three of them. Well, this morning, everything's within about a five-block area, so I went did my regular workout at the Y, and then I went over to the Historical Society where I knew the Gary Gisselman, who is a Marathon County Historical Society member, and he handles everything. And he was the librarian right across the street from the post office for probably 30 years. So he said that, yeah, he's been researching this too, and he's got a handle on some of the information. And what he promised me he would do today or in the next couple days is Mr. Gates gave him the email address and everything and get in contact with him to help him in any way he can. And I think some of the areas those were what your guest just said about they were commissioned things, and that was probably through the government, obviously, the General Service Administration. And those would be the places Gary would probably start to try to locate him. And he also mentioned something about the David Obie's office might have been in that building, so that would be another place to start. But anyhow, I think we can get to the bottom of this probably very shortly.
Okay. There you go. Oh, man. There you go, Mike. You're going to have an answer. You're going to have to send me a note and let me know exactly where it went, because I wonder.
We'll get that on your Facebook page, Larry, and if nothing else, when we if we get together to discuss the next issue, we could bring this up again. It's really a neat mystery. But the post office fellow David Gates, he's put together a book on this. No secret, he's got a couple of books, but he's done two states so far. Wisconsin's one. So you can find all the Wisconsin post office mural locations listed if you go to his website. So it's called Post Office Fans, all one word, postofficefans.com.
There we go. So, and you have some great photos of some of the murals, and they are beautiful, and they're certainly worth looking for. I know in the story it said some people just go to the post office just to see the murals.
Yeah, and I look at this long list of 35 towns, and that would make a really cool road trip sometime. Just plan a few. Our readers are they love to get out and about in Wisconsin, and as we're talking about COVID here, there's a lot of things outdoors you can do too. There's cranberry marsh tours. There's autumn color tours. The sky glider up Rib Mountain in Wausau, that's outdoors. So there are some things we can do and experience in getting out of the house without gathering in big clusters. And
sure,
that's all about Wisconsin.
Chris in Cooksville, we'll go to you now. Hi, Chris.
Hello. Thank you.
Hi. Well, thank you.
Near Cooksville, you had years ago, someone had sent me a publication of your magazine, and in it were a couple of drawings my father had done in the 1930s. And our family seems to have no idea where those drawings had originated. And I wondered, and I'm curious, how you folks came on to them, and might I be able to see them, or is there a means for me to see them or take pictures of them even?
Well,
I've got a second question, but that's the first.
I'm drawing a blank here, Chris. Can you tell me just a little bit about what the drawings were about or the subject of them?
This is probably 6 or 8 years ago, so you may not remember anyway. But my father and his sister hitchhiked from Wisconsin to Mississippi and drew some pictures. They went to a county court and just drew pictures of the judge and the people in the audience, and you folks posted those pictures.
Hmm.
We'd never seen or had any idea they had done them.
And what was it? What was his name? I'm sorry.
Burton Beebe.
Burton Beebe. Okay. Well, that at least gives Mike a way to go back through the, you probably got all this posted online somehow, Mike. Maybe.
Yeah, we do have indexes. We can try to get to the bottom of it. So, we'll take a look for that, and we can post it on our Facebook page once we find it.
Sure thing. Or you can write Chris as well. Just write to our Wisconsin magazine, and or send an email, and they can probably get back to you.
Editors at ourwisconsinmag.com.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. You know, one of the funniest stories in the book was in your magazine was Let Them Make Cake.
Okay, well, we...
Three teenage boys once cook up the plan that brought them to, and you've got the in the headline, tears, brought them to tears, but tears is spelled T-I-E-R-S, and it has to do with cakes.
Well, this is the second story about Lady Smith in this issue. And I can tell you, the writer of this story now lives in Green Bay over on the west side, and his name's Gary Kucha. He's having a lot of fun with this. He's recalling his high school years at Ladysmith in about 1957 when he was a senior at Ladysmith High, and he and two of his friends were in January that year were at home one evening and playing a little Monopoly, and on the local radio station, WLDY in Ladysmith, they had an annual March of Dimes charity benefit, and they put an auction on the air selling items to raise money for the March of Dimes, which was spun out of Franklin D. Roosevelt, and it was polio research is what it was, treatment, until they reached a vaccine and got it distributed. And again, another this sounds familiar too. But what they're putting on the air, you could buy in these, I love these rural town stories, you could buy fresh canned juice, peaches, pickles, a dozen eggs, some fishing poles, lawn mowing, babysitting, movie tickets, a few chickens, or a quarter of a cow. And these guys, young bucks are playing Monopoly, said, we could bake a cake. Okay, auction off a cake. All right. Hey, and for every dollar bid higher, we'll put another layer on it. Okay, so they call in, get to the announcer, and he says, this is really a good idea. And someone calls in with a $2 bid, and the boys are playing Monopoly, and they're happy, and they're becoming tycoons. And here comes a $3 bid and a $4, and this is pretty fun. Five or six, and they caught some attention. 10 layers? These are 17-year-old boys now. All they know about a kitchen is that's where mom fed them. A $15 bid? The Monopoly game stops, and they start thinking, how do we make a 15-layer cake? And they're considered bidding hits 20. Uh-oh, we got to stop this. So they call the radio station, and, of course, now everybody knows about voicemail. Back there was something called the line is busy. They couldn't get a phone call through to get the bidding stopped, and now they're sweating. 24, 25. Finally, they get it stopped at 26. A 26-layer cake, and none of these kids had baked one in his life. What do you do? Call mom. So they fessed up to their parents what they did, and the mothers rolled up their sleeves. One ran the neighborhood grocery store. She donated all the Jiffy cake mix. Love this small town stuff. A woman across the street was one of the mothers. She starts baking layers in her house. She's shuttling them across the street where Gary's poor mother is giving over her kitchen to this disaster. The people at the Ladysmith Bakery called and said, get a hunk of plywood, drill a hole in it, stick a dowel in there, support. Okay, the whole town's getting into this now. And they're saying, if it wasn't for our mothers, he said, we'd still be at this and we're all 80 years old. So anyway, a dairy farmer by the name of Alf Liebert in the town of Tony was a top bidder, and he shows up to pick up his cake. And they don't know how they're going to get this in the car, but a news photographer took a picture of this, probably a paper that's long defunct, and somehow it made it into the Minneapolis and Milwaukee papers. And you know what? Alf Liebert took it to the Union Co-op, and he sold pieces with coffee to the farmers and helped the March of Dimes that way, too. Again, fun. And I'll tell you, we're hearing from Gary and other of these people who wrote in. They're calling in, they're ordering 10, 20, 30, 40 copies of this stuff because they're having a blast telling these stories. And this is the kind of stuff that makes it fun here at Our Wisconsin.
Well, that one was really fun. You know, I thought about myself when I was that age, and that was probably some of the kind of harebrained idea that I might have come up with myself. And but then it all turned out well. You know, they sold their cake for $26, but then the farmer turned around and sold it piece by piece for another dollar a piece.
You know, half baked ideas sort of came together.
Oh man. Well, people can submit stories to Our Wisconsin magazine. Obviously, they do. And how can people submit a story to Our Wisconsin?
We welcome submissions here because, as I said before, ideas are really the lifeblood of what we do, and good ideas can come from any place. You don't have to be a journalist or some kind of a writer. Most of the best stuff we get in, honestly, comes handwritten in letters and on cards, and there'll be a kernel of an idea there, and you don't have to be a big professional writer. Just send a letter, and we can help sand off the corners a little bit. There's no problem there. So to submit a story or a photo of what's going on in Wisconsin today or some of these yesteryear stories, you can email us, editors@ourwisconsinmag.com. And you can also go to our website where we have some suggestions for you, contributor guidelines, a few ideas just to get the juices flowing. You can visit us at ourwisconsinmag.com.
You mentioned photos, and of course, the kind of look forward to this edition every year because the fall color shots appear, and you've got a nice fold-out is three pages across as you look at it. And what a beautiful shot there of, what is it?
St. Peter's Dome. That's a high point that's located near Marengo. That's about 13 miles from Lake Superior, kind of up around the Haywood area, a little bit north of there. We have something called the Big Picture, and it's a three-page gatefold, as they say, splashed across a big horizontal picture. And this is by Paul Ostrom of Haywood. And we have in the magazine, I've described to you in the past, Larry, my undying frustration because I'm the one who creates all the ugly gray stuff in this magazine, and our photographers are the ones that put the color in it, and that's what we hear about the most. We pride ourselves in color. We print it on the very best paper we can find. It's while other publications are getting thinner, we get thicker. And we do rely on professional photographers to in the display positions, I'll call that the covers, and a large photo essay in the center to splash the color. And we call that, you know, we got fall color. People love the October, November issue. And then we work in the stories from the regular readers around it. And it's a formula that seems to work. We work with about 50 pro photographers who submit their pictures to us. And they're grateful because there are fewer magazines these days, but we seem to keep chugging along.
Well, I tell you what, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show, Mike, and I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. Thank you so much.
Well, Larry, thank you, and here's a little spread the love back WPR's way. Ever since we launched this thing in 2013, about 8 years ago, you stepped up and said, hey, let's talk about this in the magazine, and thank you for giving us a boost when we were nothing but an idea off a kitchen table.
Well, Mike, always a pleasure. We'll look forward to your next visit. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mike Bino, editor of Our Wisconsin Magazine. The October-November issue is out now, and we've talked about some of the stories today with him. It's always fun to hear some of the stories, and some that I mentioned that we didn't even get to. So that's all right. You can just take a look and see for yourself. Tomorrow on Garden Talk, Patty Nagai will be back to talk about what you should clean up in your garden and what you should leave. That's tomorrow at 11, Saturday morning at 6, and online, of course, anytime. Thank you so much for listening, and please do stay with us. Lots more in store right through the afternoon on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.